He said for me, the timing of that, he had just pressed the record button when you said yours was smaller.
No, I hit it right after that.
Oh.
Okay. So, everyone, welcome to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
And this is Ben.
And John.
All right, so some people might be expecting this week to be listening to our HB Comics interview, but we decided to put that on hold because we want to do a Man of Steel special.
And because I actually saw it on the opening weekend.
Yes, all three of us went out this weekend and saw it. So number one, if you're listening to this, there will be spoilers. We're not going to hold back. And two, we decided that we had to do this because not all of us agree on that movie.
So, yeah. So this will be much more interesting than our Iron Man review.
So, let's get into it. John, what did you think of the movie?
Zimmer.
All right. So,
I would say my favorite part was the soundtrack.
All right. So,
versus.
I'm going to start off by just saying I did not enjoy the movie. I did not find it to be a good Superman movie. They missed set on a lot of places. They made, in my opinion, they took a lot of liberties with the character that they shouldn't have, especially in the first movie. And they should have done a better job of representing who Superman is, if it's supposed to be bringing a new generation in. What did you think, Ben?
I beg to differ, in that I thought actually that the changes that they made were smart, and I was in favor of them, and I thought that it was a great new introduction of Superman to a new generation, a great new version of the DC Universe that they're building that I would love to see more of.
Okay.
Now, and John, what did you think? Sorry.
Somehow, I'm in the middle of this. You know, I enjoyed it. The feeling I get is that the original script was very well written, and then somehow a few revisions got Michael Bay-ized and basically
I like that.
What we've got.
Yes.
And I get the feeling that if we had seen probably what was originally written or what was originally envisioned, we would have had a movie that was like 3 or 4 hours long. So we probably lost a lot in the translation and the cutting and all that as well. But I liked the ideas that they introduced. I liked some of the retconning. I did not enjoy the soundtrack at all. No. Soundtrack
Poor
was
Hans.
Okay. So there's it. Yeah.
All right. So before I begin to
deconstruct,
I want to say that this is not based on being a slave to the Donnerverse. I've read a lot of reviews and comments online, and people are saying, oh, the only reason you don't like it is because you grew up with the Donner movies, and no. See, I think the issue is that if you're going to make a Superman movie in 2013, you have to not only look at the Donner movies, and I understand they separated themselves from the movies, and I'm totally fine with that, but you have to look at the comics, the Fleischer cartoons, the serials. I think you should need to look at every representation of Superman.
And including Smallville?
Including Smallville. Ooh. And take what are the recurring characterizations of that character.
So distill that down and come up with
exactly.
What is the common
thing. What is the core of who Superman is, and how do we represent this on the big screen? And I feel they didn't do that. Or they did it, but then they took a different understanding of who the core character is, and that's probably why the movie bothered me so much. So, what I mean by that is, one of the things I keep hearing over and over again is that, you know, people didn't feel that it was a fun movie. You know, it took itself very seriously.
That is the one thing that my wife and I were discussing it after the fact, and that's the one thing that she pointed out that was a little lacking. If you compare it to, say, the recent Marvel movies,
mm-hmm.
there was a lack of humor. There was a lack of lightness to it.
Right.
That the Marvel universe, they definitely make an effort to include. And I think that was one of the best parts of the recent Avengers movie, is all the humor that they made an effort to incorporate. And the same with Iron Man 3. There was some amount of humor peppered in there that made it more entertaining than just an action flick.
Right.
And that was not really present in The Man of Steel. The only real example of that was, you know, that you could even say was close to that was the stunt with the truck.
Right, which is funny because that's one of the things I felt Clark Kent wouldn't do. I mean, he destroyed public property worth thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, because he was angry about something. And I get that they put it in for the joke and for the laugh, and that's fine, but... And I let it go at first, but then as the movie went on and we got deeper into the character of who we're looking at, it was like, ooh, well, that's just a symptom of, you know, this guy is, he's more brooding.
And he's ready to pop.
And he's ready to pop, exactly, than what I'm used to my Clark Kent and my Superman being.
Yeah, but I think there were elements of that. And you say that there, you know, you think they should distill it from all the sources. I think there were elements of that in Smallville, that he was not the moral compass that he's often portrayed as in other versions of himself. He was more conflicted, and he did have more ambiguous feelings and angst and things like that, that I thought actually made him a more relatable character in this depiction.
Right. And therein is, I think, the overarching problem. I actually heard a really good review on Fat Man on Batman. Again, I mention that podcast a lot because I love it. But Ralph Garman, who shares some of my opinions on this movie, we should be looking at it as, you know, the moral compass that Superman is that instead of bringing him down to our level, we should be inspired to go up to his level when we see a movie, you know, or read a comic with him in it, or watch Smallville or whatever. It should be like, oh, wow, he did the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing. I should feel the same way. But in our society, no, we don't want those pillars of goodness anymore. We want to say, oh, no, they're just as bad as us.
Yes and no. I think that I wouldn't call him, you know, this depiction, I wouldn't say he was completely imperfect. I think that he was flawed, as anyone is flawed.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, you know, at the core of things, he was a good person. He was well, raised well. And I think that's sort of the message they were trying to get across, is that his moral fiber comes from his earthly upbringing. Not from what he is, not from who he is, but from how he was raised here on Earth. How he was raised by his adoptive parents, not because of his Kryptonian background, and that was, you know, and that was highlighted in the fact that, you know, the Kryptonian factions that were introduced with Zod and his cronies, you know, talked about how they abandoned morals, you know, eons ago because they were archaic, that they had no value or place in an advanced society. And, you know, thought he was being backwards by adhering to them.
Right, but I also think that can probably be pointed to as well, spoilers, that he was a natural-born Kryptonian versus being genetically engineered. And I think, you know, you can argue that, well, that's one of the more reasons he also had morals, is because, you know, he was a natural-born person. And there are people who are arguing about that as a change of canon, but they did change that in the Superman comics, that the Kryptonians were genetically engineered, and
right,
he was a natural born. Like, so that's all canon. So I was okay with that, but you're right. You can make the argument that because he was a natural born being, I won't say human because he's a Kryptonian,
right,
that, you know, that's why he was more predisposed to have morals versus, you know, the Kryptonians, like, and...
Yeah, I think it's actually more of a nature versus nurture.
Exactly, and I also think, too, when you think about this, they had morals, but they had a different set of morals. They had a different reason, you know,
they had different,
their motivations were different.
Different ethics and values.
Right.
And different goals.
Right, so you can't necessarily say they weren't moral, just their moral code was different than ours. You know, I mean, and it makes sense from the point of the view of how they were telling the story in the movie. But, you know, that gets back to now one of my other issues with the movie is that the portrayal of Jonathan Kent was horrible. I'm sorry. I enjoy Kevin Costner movies, and it wasn't due to his acting. It was due to the way the movie was, maybe not necessarily written, but the way the movie was cut.
Yeah, but you only have a problem with that one scene. I mean,
No.
I think he has a problem on a larger level, and that's the fact that Jonathan Kent is traditionally, like you said, with the whole nature versus nurture, Jonathan Kent is that moral compass that Clark Kent learns those values from. And in this movie, Jonathan Kent, you know, basically, you know, was skirting that line of like, well, yes, you can do great things, but don't do them. You know, even if it could cost lives, you shouldn't be doing them because I'm afraid that you might expose yourself and the world's not ready for that.
I mean, the main lesson from him in the movie was hide. Don't show your powers. You know.
Right.
Keep
them under a bushel basket.
Right. Most of his lessons that you learn, that you see portrayed in the movie come from Martha, which I don't have an issue with that. That was a great scene when he's hiding in the closet. And she comes in.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed that scene. That was a very interesting way of handling that, of his growth and his hand and dealing with and coping with these abilities that only he had, and that she basically helped him focus and concentrate and find a place of calm.
Right, which becomes a very necessary scene for, you know,
for the drama
for the drama
on,
later on in the movie. But in the same token, it's like, okay, that scene was beautiful. It was well done. They needed more scenes like that in the movie. Because this movie starts off action.
Yeah.
Takes a slight break, and then action, 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 and it's relentless through the entire
movie. And I will say that is one of the issues I do have with the movie is the way that they went. Like, I love the introduction, the whole scene on Krypton, of the buildup of things there with Jor-El and Zod, and we'll get to that.
Okay.
But my one contention was I felt that, and I don't have a problem with broken chronology and storytelling. I'm fine with things jumping around.
Right.
But the fact that they jump straight from him taking off, you know, to Earth, to him scruffy and on the, you know, crabbing boat.
Hobo.
And there was no transition in there.
Right.
It just sort of, it was just this fast transition and you were just expected to go along with it. And I felt that there could have been some better, transition there.
Right. Which was very Batman Begins-esque. It has how they told a lot of his childhood stuff was through flashbacks.
Yeah.
And it was for the idea to keep the movie going forward without spending a lot of time in his childhood. And I get that. And,
sure.
And I actually didn't have a problem with that.
No, and I think in a lot of the ways they did do that well, a lot of, you know, filling in those backstories, gradually peppering them in, I thought they did great. I thought that was well handled as far as the cinematography of the movie, of getting those pieces introduced. I thought they did well. That my one complaint was that hard cut from, you know, drama on Krypton to him being on a fishing boat.
When the movie started and we're on Krypton and they show it as different than it's ever been depicted in television or film before.
Yes.
And they did a great job of, okay, we're on an alien planet. This isn't
right.
Earth. It's different. I was okay with that. It was really well done. Like those giant elephant
architecture, there
size
was
creatures.
Wildlife. There was things there besides this desolate crystal landscape.
Right.
The way that it had previously been depicted.
Then after about 5 minutes, I'm like, this is enough on Krypton already. Like, you know, okay, yes, they spent quite a bit of time in the original Donner movies on Krypton too, but it just felt like now there was action going on Krypton. Now there's Jor-El kicking butt, which someone please explain to me how in a genetically engineered society, someone who's genetically engineered to be a scientist can kick butt. I'm sorry, don't go against your own canon you're setting up for your movie.
I don't.
So, Anyway.
Well, let me ask, is that something that they established, that they were not only genetically engineered, but genetically engineered to specific jobs, career paths?
Yes, they say that. That they're designed to, because without that, Zod, you can't explain how Zod can kick major butt at the end of the movie, because he was designed to be a warrior, to be in the army, and to be the best warrior he can be. So Jor-El would be a scientist who's designed to be the best scientist he can be, but yet all of a sudden he can kick butt.
He was a very physical scientist.
I think you should just take it as it came, because you're probably lucky that he didn't pull out a lightsaber and start going to town.
Yes, because I will say that the beginning sequence is very Star Wars-esque in the feeling that, you know, the bad guys have technology, the good guy is on an animal. Like, these are all aspects that Lucas has used in the Star Wars movies over and over again. It was like, maybe they're borrowing a little too much from that world.
But I think that made some level of sense. If I were him, I would have ridden an animal as well, because they can't track it. I mean, they can follow him, but they can't. I'd imagine, as advanced as their technology is, if he was flying one of their crafts, they could disable that craft and, you know, remotely take it down. So he would be kept from following through.
Oh, I know. And it was good. Well, you know, from that aspect, right, logically, if you want to go down that road, yes. But it was just a little too much, I think. And it even looked like one of the scenes from the new trilogy that, you know.
I guess so.
And I'm just thinking there, like John just said, I'm waiting for Obi-Wan to show up and pull out a lightsaber. It was just like, okay. So we have Obi-Wan Jor-El, I think, is how this works.
Yeah.
And then that was another thing. Like, there was too much Jor-El in this movie.
No,
I don't agree with that at all.
Too much.
I don't think so. I think he was well used. I think having him developed as a character initially, I thought was valuable. It helped establish a reason for him doing this. I mean, if you look at the original movie, other than saving his son from the destruction of Krypton, it didn't seem like there was a good foundation for that. That seemed kind of selfish. But in this story, they actually, you know, he's not only saving his son, he's saving
the Kryptonian race. He's trying to save him from himself, basically.
Exactly. He's giving the Kryptonian race a new future in a new form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if he doesn't care if the stuff gets extracted from him to create the new race, he's at least giving Kryptonian race a chance to live on in some form, in the form of his son, you know, moving on to another planet where he will be, a more powerful and can be a guiding force to make that society a better place. So there's something there beyond just the, I need to save my child from this blowing up planet.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the point was that the Kryptonian race had reached its apex and was on it was degrading.
I mean, right. They'd overused the resources on their planet to a point beyond what was sensible.
Okay.
Evolutionary too. I mean, they reached the point where they basically didn't even have live births anymore.
Right.
There was no genetic diversity anymore, and they were a dying race. I mean, a spacefaring race, there are thousands of years in technology ahead of us, and they're all on one planet.
Right.
And this storyline finally went at least a little bit into explaining why.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you'd expect that there'd be hundreds.
They should have spread out already across other worlds, which apparently they did attempt to, but for whatever reason those failed. In instance after instance.
Well, and that's another thing. They don't
crumbled.
They don't really explain why it failed so dramatically when it's like, well, they knew Earth existed and they could have gone to Earth.
But it was inhabited. They probably wouldn't have gone there because it was an inhabited planet.
But then that doesn't explain the world engines. It was like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes and no. I think the world engines were a tool, a technological tool to make a world appropriate for their race. But I'd imagine the worlds that they targeted for the colonization would have been planets that were devoid of well, intelligent life.
Well, there you go.
I'm extrapolating.
You're extrapolating. You're filling in the gaps.
I'm certainly
that Zack Snyder and Nolan left out.
Sure.
And yet, to me, they spent so much time explaining everything else. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they explain those gaps?
And that goes back to my original comment. I think that the original screenplay probably had all this stuff in it, and they just. It got cut for time. It got revamped a couple of times.
Well, and also you have to realize a lot of this was put together for the sake of telling the story.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to have a resolution that worked for everyone, why couldn't Zod go and take his ship over to Mars and terraform that planet and leave the humans alone? Or Venus.
Right.
Or some other nearby planet that they could equally terraform to make habitable for their race.
Well, that's true. Because he wanted the genetic code that he knew was on that ship that Jor-El sent to Earth.
Why couldn't he fly that ship over to the other planet? There are so many ways that they could have come up with where this was a peacefully solvable problem, where the population of the world didn't need to be killed off.
And can someone explain that to me, too? Because, okay, I understand Zod is a warrior. He was genetically engineered to be a warrior, but yet he had no leader. But he had no interest in peace at all, even in the preservation of his people.
His interest was solely in the preservation of his people, to the extent that he saw the human race as cattle, as fodder. They were not important to his mission.
But you get the feeling in the beginning of the movie when he walks into the chamber where they're meeting and he blows away one of the leaders, I'm here to take over. I'm not here to...
Well, that's because the council had let them...
Right, the council
destroying
had,
their own planet.
Right.
Now
because
it's the same...
Right, their liability to the future of the Kryptonian race.
Right, but why didn't he just go...
They made the choice to terror...
Why didn't he just go to Jor-El and say, hey, let's get a group together, build a ship, and take refugees to another planet and let them just die here?
Well, then there wouldn't be any explosions.
Right. Look, they're working with the source material they have. They can only change the story so much still fit within that model.
Right, but I'm saying, you know, when you try to inject too much logic and make it too realistic, then it's like, well, then these questions come up. Okay, well...
Absolutely. And just like the red herring question I put in our kid questionnaire, you know, none of this should have happened. If the Green Lantern were around to keep things in order. You know, logic in this universe doesn't necessarily always dictate how things play out.
So, yeah, I mean, there's so many issues with this movie. It's not even funny.
I don't think there are that many issues.
Can I bring up an issue?
Sure.
I'd like to bring up the most important thing. How come there was only one use of the Wilhelm scream? Why only one use of the Wilhelm scream throughout the entire movie? I mean, you had a lot of time there, a lot of people being thrown on, and the body count, I must say, had to be extremely high.
Yes, that's
an issue.
This is now we're going back to the characterization of Superman, where
you mean the flawed characterization of Superman, where he could possibly save everyone? That just seems stupid. That characterization?
Not that he could possibly save everyone, but he seems to not even care about all the collateral damage he's causing.
Well, I don't think that's true.
Why couldn't he at some point go, get Zod, because Zod's going to chase him. Zod wants to kill him, right? That's his whole thing.
He was chasing Zod just as much as Zod was chasing
Right. But why didn't he lead him away to a non-inhabited area and have the fight?
Exactly. They do that in every DBZ episode. Every Dragon Ball Z episode, the first thing they say is, well, you know, let's take this somewhere where we won't, destroy the city that we're around right now. And there's that one scene in the Kansas town where Superman turns, looks at a bunch of people that are outside a storefront, and he says, oh, get inside, it's not safe here. And, literally 10 seconds later, there's a truck being thrown right into that building.
Yeah.
He wasn't really thinking there. I mean,
his intent was good. Yes. No, and yeah, I'm sure a lot of it boils down to, you know, these explosions look awesome.
Yes.
let's put them in there.
Yes.
You know, what's more fun than buildings falling over on other buildings and, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, the Daily Planet building completely collapses, which right. is then completely rebuilt by the end of the movie. Let's not get into that
issue.
Yeah,
that's sort of a bit of a...
That's another pacing issue I have with the movie, but...
Well, maybe they had more than one building.
But, like, that's coming down. Like, how many people died?
Oh my God.
From that
right,
building
from being
over.
In the building or being in its path.
Right, exactly. Like, you know. Like the body count in this movie is just astronomical
right.
for...
And we actually have a model to go to for that type of destruction, unfortunately, in the World Trade Center disaster.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, A, you know, it's somewhat unrealistic for a building to fall over in that capacity. It's more likely going to start collapsing down
right.
in the process. And B... There should have been way more dust and, you know, debris
yes.
in the air than there was in the... I mean, obviously, you're not going to get any good footage if they were that accurate to it.
And I don't have... Again, yes,
they
it looks
at least
cool.
be accurate to the physics.
It looked cool. If you don't want to be accurate to the physics, I'm one of those who will suspend
sure,
disbelief
sure.
when I'm watching something like that.
Right, it looked awesome.
And that's all that mattered.
Well,
and people
you
died.
Also noticed that despite the body count, did you actually see?
No, you didn't
count?
See any dead
bodies. I mean, it was as good as like an old G.I. Joe cartoon
well,
episode.
Well,
I mean, everybody
exactly.
Well, they know their person. Audience. They know the kids are going to go see this. They had to keep it at a level where it could keep it. Was it PG or PG-13?
PG-13. So the building collapses, devastation everywhere, and the only three people we concentrate on in Metropolis happen to be three people who work at the Daily Planet because they're main characters to the plot
right,
line.
Because those are the only ones they introduce.
But it's like, so these are the only people we care about. We don't care about anyone else that lives in Metropolis. Where now,
oh, they don't care
if we
want
to take another
they're
movie,
not focusing on them
if we want to take another movie on a massive scale, The Avengers, there is a lot in that movie
of
interactions with other people, crowds running back
that's
and forth. Captain America
had his hands in it.
Captain America like saying, "We got to get these people to safety."
Right.
Even the Hulk caring that people don't die. So it's like now
right.
all of a sudden, Superman he doesn't care if you die.
Also, I read an interesting point about that movie and about the Marvel movies in general. Is that I think it was your Cracked article that talked about how people are helpless. Because no one can think for themselves to do something. Like even those cops, Captain America had to tell them what to do. This guy who's been frozen since the 40s has a better sense of what to do than people who are trained for disaster, you know, scenarios in an urban environment.
Yep. But I think the point of a scene like that in that movie was to show the superheroes morally care about the civilians around them, not to show that they're smarter than them. But yes, I get that you can extrapolate
sure.
that point from it. That's fine. But right, and there was none of that in this. There
but
was
I
no.
Think that, you know, at the point, and I know that you have an issue with this too, that at the point where Superman is dealing with these threats, it's essentially the first time he's dealing with these types of threats. And there's only so much he can juggle. I mean, he's dealing with, you know, a half a dozen people at the same level of skill and ability as him.
Or
simultaneously.
Higher
or higher skill because they're better trained. And trying to mitigate all of their actions. And
right.
who have more advanced technology at their disposal than he has. So, I'm sure he did as much as he could to keep, you know, collateral damage to a minimum. But it was impossible. It was a Herculean task.
They don't show him at all trying to stop collateral damage.
But he's trying to save the planet.
If they had just taken one scene to show him trying to force no, he's the one that knocks Jor-El into the populated area of Smallville because he threatens his mother. Zod, I'm sorry. Yes, Jor-El, Zod.
Right? Smallville too.
Yeah, that's Smallville because they go through the silos and then they crash into the middle of this small town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all Smallville, and it's like, right? Like he brings it to the more populated area. He could have fought him on the farm
mm-hmm.
where it was just, you know, okay, his mother might have been in danger, but you know, and that's another thing. He grabs Zod and he flies off with him and he's beating the crap out of him. And
right, to protect his mother.
And he leaves the other people with his mother. I mean, come on, people. They could have just grabbed his mother. It would have been like...
But they're extras. They're stupid. They're like cattle.
Right.
They don't know what to do.
Like, why didn't they grab Martha Kent? Like, because that would... Then he would have had the ultimate control over Superman at that point. But no.
They didn't think of that.
Like, again, another plot issue. Like, oh. Mm-hmm. And just... Okay, so... So this is the first movie in what will most likely be a trilogy because I mean the number was 125 million. I'm sure it will make enough to justify bringing a second one out. I mean
they've already
fast tracked it. So you start the first one off larger than life. Like where do you go from here?
I think here's the thing, and here's.
Dark side.
Here's where things go. And I think that part of your problem with this movie is that you feel like it should have been that by the end of the movie, he should have been Superman. And he wasn't.
No. Right.
And I think that that's because they know that it's going to take more than one movie to build Superman.
I
think that that's where the sequel comes in. That I think that we're going to, by the end of the second movie, we will see Superman actually legitimately being Superman. And I think that that's legitimate. I don't think it's possible.
I will say that this movie
felt like building in a single movie.
This movie felt like the series finale of Smallville where
they created Superman put on the cape and he finally started doing something with it, but he didn't really get a chance to see him be Superman.
Right.
I agree. It is that. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with this being the first step.
However, something that was pointed out in another article and interview, and it's funny because I didn't realize that it is one of the things that bothered me is, okay, spoilers, he kills Zod.
Like we haven't burned that bridge.
Yeah. He kills Zod. He snaps his neck, which, first off...
Superman's badass.
How the hell does he snap his neck when...
Why couldn't he?
They're both at the same
skill level. All it is spinning the neck.
Same
he has
level.
The strength to do that.
I don't know.
And on the characterization of it.
Kryptonians have a weak third vertebrae.
Apparently.
I understand.
But no.
Genetic defect.
It was a moral dilemma. Sure.
Let me finish my point.
Okay.
It wasn't so much that it was a moral dilemma, okay? Because it's canon, he killed Zod. Okay, mm-hmm. Zod dies in Superman 2, and he was killed in the comic books. Okay, right. So that is canon. It's not fine. Okay, but number one, he killed him in probably one of the most brutal ways you can kill another person, as depicted in the movies.
Yeah,
you know, I mean that's.
What do you want him to do? Drop him in a volcano or something?
Drop him in the mist like he did in the.
No. Okay, yeah, and I understand in the Donner movies they did it in the mist, and it's kind of like,
that was stupid PG.
Well, that wasn't even Donner. That was after they took Donner out.
Right.
So
how was that supposed to kill him anyway? Just because he fell?
He was human at that point. Okay. No.
The
issue I have is, and actually one of our people that we work with at this company pointed this out. He killed him. Right? Uh-huh. He killed his nemesis in this movie.
Yeah.
So, people walking out of this theater who are getting their introduction to Superman through uh-huh. this movie aren't going to understand why doesn't he just kill all his enemies going forward, right? Because he's super powerful. He can just snap Lex Luthor's neck. Why does he put up with it? So, but, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the thing. It's like, that's our society today, where in a lot of movies, the good guys kill the bad guy. So why can't Superman just keep doing it?
It's not a lot. I wouldn't say it happens often. It has happened to some degree in some of the Iron Man movies. But Batman, in the most recent run, as dark as that was, he didn't kill any of the people he was
right.
up against.
Well, and that's another
except
thing.
Except for Dent, and that was inadvertent.
A lot of villains have died in superhero movies and have died in other movies. But in a lot of the superhero movies, they die, but not through intent of killing them by the other person. This was by intent of Superman. Now, yes, they back him into a movie corner
sure.
where he doesn't have a choice. He could have flown up. He could have put his hands over his eyes. He could have done a lot of other things.
I'm sure he could have done a lot of
things. But he chose to snap his neck. So that's the whole thing, is that, you know, there's a fear that people are going to walk out thinking, oh, well, that's Superman's badass, and he just kills the people in his way.
I don't think that that's not what I got from it. And that's not what I read from it either. I felt that, you know, that was a, because that scene threw out for a while. Because he could have done that sooner.
Well, and that's another thing. They're sitting there for like, it felt like a good 5 minutes.
Run away.
Why didn't Superman go, run? No.
Yeah, they were kind of backed into a corner, but seriously, they could have run towards him and away. And
yes.
There would have been, that aside.
There's a thousand ways out of that situation.
Putting that aside, the length of that was mostly because you could see that he was struggling with that. He knew that there was only one outcome to the situation.
Right.
But he didn't want to take that action. He didn't want that to be the only course of action. He struggled with it. And even after he did it, he was so remorseful of it. And so, like, he screamed, you know, out of sorrow because he had
right.
to take that action. And I think that, to me, is a sign that he doesn't want to have to ever do something like that again. And I think that will be the thing that'll drive him in him being Superman in the future
mm-hmm.
to avoid lethal action with other threats
and
whenever possible.
And I get that. And I can see how people can take that from that. And I'm glad that you said that. However, I have read other reviews online where it's like, well, he was remorseful because he killed the last of his kind. And even my 11-year-old son, when he watched that scene, that's how he felt. Oh, he killed the other last Kryptonian, not he was upset because he took a life. And
I didn't read it that way.
Exactly, but you have read and enjoyed Superman for many years.
Yeah, but I don't think my kids read it that way either.
Did you ask them?
I did not ask them that specifically. I can.
Yes, I think you should, because then that's what I'm saying. The idea of this movie is, let's get a new generation liking Superman.
Yeah.
And if they now think he wasn't remorseful because he took a life, he was remorseful because he killed the last Kryptonian, they're thinking, oh, now he's badass and he's going to kill everyone.
But he didn't really kill the last Kryptonian. The rest of them got sent through a wormhole. They're not dead.
Oh, my God, don't get me started on the Phantom Zone engine, world engine. Oh, my God, so many plot holes in this movie. It's not even funny.
Oh, and that's worse than the flat crystalline thing they had in the original movies?
No.
That they floated around the space in?
Both almost are equally as bad.
I don't think they're equally as bad at all. I think that as much as I didn't care about it at the time when I was a kid, but what they did in the stupid, you know, floating photograph was just ridiculous.
But
this actually makes a little bit more sense because it's based on physics.
But you can just, again, take it from it's a technology that we just don't understand.
Sure.
You know, because they're supposed to be thousands and thousands of years more
right.
advanced than us, it's just they figured out how to use crystals as we use electronics.
Right. Do you have the same issue with Thor and the Rainbow Bridge?
Don't knock my Rainbow Bridge.
I'm just saying, it's the same thing. It's a transportation device
right.
that you don't understand how it works, but it works, and it's advanced technology.
Right. Well, but then then you can almost hint that, okay, so they do transwarp, as we'll use in a different term, a Star Trek-y
mm-hmm.
term. They use some kind of transwarp thing. This creates a gate, lets them travel through the universe quicker. But at the same time, when they open that gate, they're traveling through the Phantom Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they drop off their worst criminals.
Right.
You know, so every time
they push out the door as the exit.
Right, exactly. So every time they travel, they're running over or passing by all their worst criminals. Like, it seemed weird to tie them together.
I took it more as if you look at this as a wormhole technology.
Right.
That essentially what they were doing with the criminals is holding them at the edge of an event horizon where it wasn't as if they were in some other realm that existed, this other realm between realms, but they were just trapped at the edge of that wormhole and held there in a way that they couldn't escape on their own.
Okay. Well, that was definitive.
No,
clearly he won that argument.
30 love, you're sure.
No. It was like, yeah. Again, you're extrapolating to make it make sense in your mind.
Right.
And it just
you're doing
like,
the same to put it down. You're nitpicking for the same reason.
True.
So.
That's how these kinds of arguments usually work.
Yes.
So, another thing is the, people were just looking in. Our boss's boss.
Nice.
Anyway, all right. So let's.
I'd like to interject. I'd like to discuss something.
All right.
I forgot what it was. No. Okay. Well, you know, I've got two very opinionated guys here, and I'm trying to get a word edgewise, but all I can do is, you know, I don't get the Wilhelm scream in, apparently. Now, one of the things I had a problem with was how they were, and it wasn't really well described, but how they were saying he gained his powers. It wasn't just like the radiation from a yellow sun.
Sure, there was a combination of factors. It was the young sun, the lighter gravity field of Earth, and the different composition of the atmosphere that seemed to be the crux of him having the abilities he had.
So,
well, and that's another question. Why did they change Krypton's sun from red to yellow?
Did they?
They did.
I didn't notice that specifically.
Yeah, they said that it was a younger, that they had an older sun, and when they show Krypton blow up, it is a yellow sun. Like, they could have kept the red star as another, again, the yellow radiation versus the red radiation gives him his powers.
Yeah, because according to the, you know, the way they described it, we should be able to go at the moon and be able to lift 1,000 tons.
Well, you can.
Well, yeah, but we can't fly. We can't.
Have you tried?
No, obviously I haven't tried hard enough.
All right, so
I'm a failure.
So anyway, so back to your point. How do they explain how he gets his powers?
Well, they explain it as basically a young sun which nourished him, and the atmosphere which nourished him. Apparently, there was a lot of nourishment going on somewhere.
Well,
and that was it. That was it. There was one mention of his mother telling him that she had stayed outside his door worried because his breathing was so bad when he was young.
Right, because it took him a while to adjust to the atmosphere of Earth.
Thank you for bringing that up. So there you go. There is a plot point.
What about it?
That they go against themselves.
How?
Why? Okay, so, and they also make a point that when Clark, Kal-El, Superman, whatever you want to call him,
mm-hmm.
is brought onto their ship,
yes.
which has the
he
same atmosphere.
He has a lot of difficulty breathing.
He passes out, and then he also doesn't have his powers
right.
while he's on the ship.
They fade.
Okay.
They faded really good.
But yet, when Jor-El changes the atmosphere back to Earth, he gets his powers back. Okay.
So why is it when
the Kryptonians
mm-hmm.
are on Earth and they don't have their helmets on?
Why do they have abilities?
Not why do they have abilities. Why don't they have a problem breathing?
They did have a problem breathing. Both Feyora and Zod had trouble breathing when their masks got broken.
Yeah, but not like
not like he Clark did.
Because they're adults. They can adapt a little bit more quickly than an infant.
But when they switched it the other way, Superman passed out.
Well, they're also Kryptonian, and
is this a
I had something and I got
did the
yeah,
sun
the sun helped.
Did the sun help?
Like,
the
sun helped. Like,
they were outdoors.
Like, it was one thing, you know, he takes the helmet off, and to me, all they were showing is that all of a sudden now he had all the super senses, and he couldn't handle that. And that was, again, the exposition of the scene with his mother, where he started to learn to control his powers at that point in his mm-hmm. life. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, I had 33 years to learn how to control my powers. You're getting it all at once. You know, blah, 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 blah.
That was okay.
But yet, there should have been the combination of I can't breathe and I'm being shocked with all this information at once.
Yeah, but it's not as if it's not a breathable atmosphere, because obviously, you know, Clark adjusted to it.
But he has 33 years to adjust to
it. Sure, but it's not like he took, you know, years to adjust to it.
And infants are more adaptable, I think, than full-grown adults.
Maybe they had a store of Simbacore at there. the ship.
a being that's still developing can adapt better than a being who's already developed, right?
Maybe.
So that drove me nuts. Like, they should have shown them having a difficulty breathing without the helmets.
They did.
Not to the extent right. the other way around.
But they did. Well, because the Kryptonian atmosphere makeup might contain toxic chemicals.
And or maybe it would have stopped the
fire. They were not used to such clean
air. Oh! So you're saying ignore our own plot points so that we can keep the movie going.
Well, you know, you weren't... And I am saying that. I am definitely... I mean, when all of a sudden, out, you know, just it so happens Superman's on Earth and they just happen to find that ship that's been buried for 18,000 years, you know, when they could have easily have made it him mussing around with his ship, and that's what sent MacGuffins.
Tell me what your
favorite... There were a lot of MacGuffins.
Tell me what your favorite superhero movie of the past decade has been.
My favorite superhero movie of the past decade. That's tough.
Would Avengers be in that list of content?
Yeah.
How many plot holes did that movie have?
Quite a few.
It had ridiculous plot holes.
And I'm okay with MacGuffins.
And I don't care about that.
The MacGuffin of Bruce Banner showing up just at the right time.
After having stolen a bike.
After and a pair of pants.
Well, and also the one of Thor managing to transport from Asgard to Midgard without any technology that should have been able to support it. And land right on the plane that they were flying.
And don't forget the scientist who mysteriously was able to fight his mind control to put in a way to open up
the
force field around.
And the Chitauri all conveniently died when the wormhole got closed.
But
I think Josh Whedon addressed that one.
Yeah, Josh Whedon addressed that.
There are huge plot holes, and his addressing of that was saying they didn't have time to kill them all, so he just killed them all at once because he wanted them to keep fighting them until they were all done. But there wasn't, the movie was running long as it was, so he just said, alright, they all died.
So it was a deadly MacGuffin.
It was. And I love the Avengers, and I don't care about those plot holes. I think it was a great movie. It was a good story. And I felt that this also was a well done story. It's a first part to a story, but it was well done.
But
I'm willing to accept some of these plot holes that you're pointing out.
It's not necessarily plot holes where
it's inconsistency.
It's inconsistency. The movie was inconsistent throughout, and I feel it suffered because there was too much action and not enough exposition.
That I'll agree with.
Because if they had cut the movie differently and they had shown more, there was more talking and there were more scenes of Zod and, what was the woman's name?
Fiora.
And less explosions.
And of them sitting on the ship saying, oh wow, this atmosphere really is messing with us. Let's figure out how to adapt, you know, because that's another thing. They changed the atmosphere on the ship.
They should have been adjusted by then.
That's
your explanation as to why they didn't show that when they were on Earth, because they had already gone through those pains. And the only thing they had to adjust to was the new heightened senses.
Another thing I kind of had issue with the inconsistency in this movie is the depiction of flight in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
When he first puts the suit on, which, oh my god, don't even get me started about how he gets the suit. We already talked about this outside of the podcast. I mean, here's a 10,000-year-old ship that just happened to have a suit his size with the House of El symbol on it and a red cape.
But it was sent there by his father.
Yeah. Oh, no. That ship wasn't sent by
his father. That ship wasn't sent by his father.
I thought Jor-El sent that ship.
No.
No.
That was just one of their scout ships.
But all right,
Jor-El was on it because he puts the data key in.
Right, and based on that, couldn't Jor-El also have started running subroutines to have that suit generated in a special suit generator closet that's on the ship?
But again,
they show
which
nanites,
is probably what that is.
They show nanites creating stuff in the beginning on right. Krypton, where he's just creating stuff.
Right, and I loved all that sort of like silver marbles as
they could have taken
mutable technology.
Yeah. They could have taken 2 seconds to show the suit being built.
Yes, they could
behind have. The door. Otherwise, you
I'm
can
rolling look, my eyes at him right now, just so you know.
They took 2 seconds to show everything else. Why couldn't
that
they take
up to a lot of seconds? And as it was 2.5 hours long.
So anyway,
for every plot point explained, an explosion loses its.
So he walks out of the ship.
Of the ship, in his
our Fortress of Solitude for in this movie, because that's the only one we got. Because there isn't one. But it did seem to take the place of it.
It did.
He walks out, and, you know...
And he jumps.
And he jumps.
And he falls.
And he falls. And he jumps and he falls. And then finally...
But that's an homage to the original Superman, who could not fly.
Right, who could not fly.
Could only jump.
Right, he could only jump. A feat of strength, right? His flight was a feat of strength.
Well, of legacy.
And then he absorbs some solar radiation.
Yeah, takes a deep breath.
And jumps really hard. And defies gravity.
And wait, so... But they kept going back and forth on it, where they had to jump a great distance, a la the Incredible Hulk. That's what it really felt like when he was jumping.
Right.
And then changing it to, no, it's actually flight. They went back and forth on it, and it got really frustrating, really quick.
If you all of a sudden had the ability to flight, how long would it take you to master that?
The army shows up, and he's floating there like Jesus.
Yes, and that's some time later after he's had enough practice at it. That's very similar to the Iron Man.
But then when he's going,
I was about to pull that off.
It's exactly like Iron Man's learning to fly.
But then
it took him a while to get past just...
But then when he's going to the Indian Ocean to fight the giant spider...
Right. Octopus spider.
When he's going to fight the giant octopus spider made of marbles... He goes, stand back. A little farther. Now, I understand they put that scene in there to get a little smile between... The moment between Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
So, I kind of feel like that moment was put in there to... But yet, he doesn't ever do that again in the movie.
Yeah.
And...
Well, that was pretty close to the end of the movie.
But you get the feeling like he's jumping again to take off.
Right.
He's not just flying away.
Well, he's got
away.
A long flight to go on. He wants to get some speed up. He's got to go to, like, Mach 30 to get there in time.
but this was after he was floating in front of everyone. So
floating doesn't take as much energy.
You really are.
Floating's just fun.
I can't.
Just hang out there.
I can't.
But to get to like the Mach 30, he needed to missile himself halfway around the world. He needed
an incredible amount of
build-up behind him.
You'll forget anything this movie did.
Then you're missing a rabid brony to do the Mach calculations on the Mach cones, figure out what his land speed, his airspeed velocity was. Yes.
He was on Laden.
African or European.
Yeah. Hey, if they can figure it out, Rainbow Dash, I'm sure they can figure it out.
Yes.
So inconsistency. You know, and they could have... Again, it was too much action. If they had done more exposition... Another thing is, there are some major themes in this movie, right?
Except for the ones that Zimmer wrote, but go ahead.
There is the struggling whether or not to reveal himself to people. And they set that up by him traveling the world...
Basically being no one.
Being no one, trying to find himself.
Doing odd jobs.
You know, and it's funny because... Because people had issues with that.
I didn't have an issue with that either.
Too.
I thought that fit.
I think
it actually fit the canon of how they depicted him in the first Superman movie.
Exactly. I think it fit with him. Just he was on a journey to find himself. But then the issue is never truly resolved because he's forced to reveal himself.
Right.
Where in canon from the comic books and original movies and everything else, he chooses to reveal himself and be, you know, the savior of humanity, if you will.
I understand.
And
I'm okay with that change in canon.
And I kind of feel it takes something away from Superman when he's forced to do it.
I understand what you're saying. But at the same time, yes, he was forced. But it was something that he struggled with, the decision on when and where to do it anyway. And in this case, he obviously had to. But I think my issue with the traditional canon for his reveal is it doesn't fit with the modern world's reaction to him. Like, if he tried to pull his normal introduction to the world, you know, without there being a threat for him to be faced against, I mean, we even saw the military were attacking him left and right for quite a while before they finally were like, you know what, don't target him. You know, he seems to be, a valuable asset here.
He didn't really say he was okay until saved that colonel from a knife fight.
Exactly. So it took him a while to come around to actually not targeting him while they were targeting everyone else. So, but I think that's realistic that, A, if the military found out that there was, whether they found out there was someone with superhuman abilities,
mm-hmm.
or they found out that there was a extraterrestrial alien on our planet, either or would cause a military response to track this being down and lock them down and figure out what they are. And he was both of those things in one.
Right.
For that to come out real to the world, in a world where there wasn't any of this drama presenting itself,
mm-hmm.
I don't think he would get anything done. I think he would immediately be hampered by the response from the military, from the media, from all of these things that would make any effort that he had put out to be this Superman would have been just moot. Whereas I think it was wise of them in the story to make his debut be tied to a credible threat that he dispatched and saved Earth in doing so.
Right. And okay.
Because it gives the world, it's like, well, we don't know what he is, we don't know, but at least we know he's on our side.
I don't know if I agree with that, because if his first appearance was digging people out of rubble after an earthquake, I don't think they would fire upon him right away.
Right.
Not
exactly.
Right away, or but they'd still try to detain him to figure out what he is.
They'd have
or
to
if,
try and catch him first.
Yes. And I don't want to see three, you know, volumes of Superman playing the part of the Hulk being chased by General Ross. I don't. That's not the Superman movies I want to see.
True, true.
No, and I agree. But again, at the same time, if they showed him rescuing a plane about to crash, saving the president's
right.
Air Force One, you know, maybe there'd be second thoughts about, is this guy a threat?
Perhaps, but I think that might be a little too on the nose. And then there'd be media outlets saying that he did this as a ploy to gain our trust and things like that, and that would pollute it in a completely different way.
You live in such a cynical world.
That's this world.
Right, exactly. That's why I go to superhero movies to escape this world.
Right.
So to try to bring this world, try to bring the movie world down to the level of this world, that's where I start having a problem.
Well, I'm okay with it to a degree.
Can I add one more thing?
No.
Thank you.
I'll allow it.
This is what
I'll
I do.
Cover his mouth for a minute.
I would like to say that I am so glad that Lois Lane actually has a brain in this.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, they're not going to try to pull
no.
Oh, he's got glasses on. She can't possibly
right.
know who
Although
he is.
I do agree with that one point that guy made in that article you posted,
mm-hmm.
in that that does create an interesting conundrum for going forward. I like that they didn't try to pull off the whole glasses disguise bit, that his anonymity, or his disguise is anonymity, that basically people don't know who he is, and people don't know who Clark Kent is, and the very few people who do are going to protect him and protect his secret. And I, you know, so I see that from his mother, I understand that from people back in Smallville,
mm-hmm.
and Lois obviously has a vested interest, but there is the flaw in that guy brought up, and you know, why would Perry continue to, you know, he's got to be able to figure it out. He's seen him close enough,
right,
to know that this guy he just hired is secretly Superman, and probably a couple other people probably could figure it out as well.
Well,
and more people will as he does more things, within, you know, the realm of people that he knows. So the question is, how will they maintain that going forward in the future movies?
You maintain it. Okay. Now, a lot of people have always had a problem with the issue of he's just wearing glasses.
Right.
But he's not just wearing glasses.
No, he's not. He's styling his hair slightly differently.
Donner
and hunching over
and being clumsy.
Donner did it. I think. Well, no, not Donner. Christopher Reeve portrayed it well. They were two different characters he was portraying. He
Ooh.
Did a great job of doing that.
Absolutely.
And
it was transformative.
And they have to bring that to the next movie because, and it was explained in, I can't remember, oh, Birthright. They explain
mm-hmm.
it in the Superman Birthright storyline. It's not just he's put glasses on and he slouches. He acts like a completely different person.
Yes.
And we live in a world where our world is dictated by our own perception.
Right.
And if I perceive that you're a bumbling idiot,
mm-hmm.
even though you happen to look a little bit like...
Be nice to John.
You happen to look like that guy in the cape flying around saving people, I'm not going to believe you are because, you know...
I understand that.
Because people look like people, right?
That was profound there.
They use that explanation in a lot of fiction and such, like the Dresden novels. Nobody sees magic because when they see it happen, they don't believe it.
Right. There's a filter in their brain to say, well, no, that's
that
not...
doesn't fit.
That doesn't fit. So this guy doesn't fit with the hero that's going around saving everyone.
Right.
And that's really how they explain how it works.
I understand.
That guy in the car, he couldn't possibly be Superman because he's not wearing blue.
But that's the whole thing.
I just think that there's a potential for that to be a fine line to skirt. If they try to stick to the more gritty, grounded approach that they have with this movie, I think that this is going to be a challenge in future movies.
I mean, let's put it this way: the movie ends with Perry introducing Clark Kent to everyone who's seen him up close already in the movie that works at the Daily Planet.
Right.
And everyone's like, oh, welcome, Clark.
I love Lois's line, like, welcome to the planet.
Yeah.
Right.
He could solve that really easy. He just has to kiss everyone.
No, I act, and that is something in Superman 2 I've always had an issue with, the super kiss.
Yeah.
The amnesia kiss, yes.
Only
one of his minimum very powers.
I know every man has wished to have that, but...
New cracked article that mentioned that about how that's was it what they say it's they said it it's it makes roofies okay.
so
there's a whole article on it. Go to cracked.com.
So getting back to the themes of the movie, so there was the struggling to reveal himself, forced to reveal, and then the other major theme is acceptance, right? Because Jonathan Kent tells us over and over again, don't reveal yourself because the world's not ready to accept you.
Right.
And Jor-El tells him, you're going to save them all, so go reveal yourself. Which, okay, before I get...
You've never gotten conflicting messages from your parents?
before I get to the message of acceptance, which I don't feel was handled as well as it could have been, that's another thing that's a change from the canon that I had an issue with, and we already got to that, where... Jonathan Kent has always been portrayed as his moral center. Now all of a sudden, birth dad good, adopted dad bad.
Not bad. He's protective.
But protective to the point where it's almost a fault to.
Well, again, I'm okay with that. People are not perfect. No one is.
Yeah,
and no one should be depicted as perfect.
But here's where
I think he had legitimate fear for his son's acceptance in the world that drove him to be a little more reactionary than he should have been, but was understandable for his character. He felt his son had the potential to be accepted by the world in the right place and time, but at the same time wanted to protect him as long as possible, just like any parent wants to protect his
child. Protect him to the point where it killed him.
Yes, and you can't tell me that it's not a sacrifice. Most parents are at least, you know, implicitly willing to go to that length, to protect your children at the cost of your own life.
Yeah.
But go ahead, you were going to say something.
Me? I get a turn?
No. Yes, John.
No, I was going to say, I actually agree with you, Dave, on this point about how John Kent never would have said, yeah, maybe you should have let them die.
Right.
He never, but on the other side.
He didn't really necessarily say that specifically. He hedged on even saying that.
Yeah, he said maybe.
Because he wasn't really sure what the right answer was.
But even that much is, you know, that's not... That's not what gave Clark Kent his, you know, base of do I care? Do I save people? What, you know, do I just go all out and do what I need to do, no matter what the consequences are? If I can't stand the wraps and I reveal my secret identity, fine, I save people because that's the right thing to do.
Right, and he did do that. I mean, that's where we start out seeing him randomly saving people.
Right, but I think they needed to show more scenes with Jonathan saying that to him to establish Jonathan Kent's character. They didn't.
Yeah.
The way they established him in this movie. And I'm sorry.
And again, maybe some of that's for time, and maybe we'll see more of him in flashbacks in the future.
Now, Jonathan Kent, okay, now this is an issue with canon because sometimes his parents are alive, sometimes they're dead
right
in the books. Okay. And now, if we take the movies and the television canon, Jonathan Kent dies.
Yes.
But that's and right. that is a shaping.
Dies, except in the Avengers or Clark, where they both lie.
Well, right. Yes. But it's been used as a shaping event in Clark Kent's life that makes him who he is.
Akin to Ben Parker dying.
We have Jonathan Kent dying in the original Superman movie of a heart attack.
Right, because his son was being a dick.
Well, and
he was basically racing him across the yard, and then he had a heart attack, and before he could reach the house.
Right, but at the same time, we have that powerful line in that moment where he says, "Even with all these powers, I couldn't save him."
Right,
right.
He tried to rub a chicken, but that didn't.
so that was a defining moment.
But his father didn't let him.
Now let's flash forward. 30 years in the Smallville, Jonathan Kent has a heart attack again. Why? Because he's fighting Lionel Luthor, defending his son.
Yeah.
And it exerts him to the point where he has the heart attack.
Right.
And
that was an unusual episode. I had some other issues with that. I was okay with them killing off his character in that, but the fact that that happened to also coincide with an episode where he essentially used a time turner to redo right. that day to save Lana, and in the end sacrificed his father in exchange. That just seemed kind of
right. Okay. And there was the total regret that he couldn't save his father.
Right.
Flash forward 2013, Man of Steel. We get a tornado.
Right.
A twist up, and. Everyone is running from the Twister to the magical overpass that's going to protect them.
That's what you would do.
Anyway.
That's actually state protocol.
Actually, that's one of the worst things you can do. That's, again, from a cracked article. But
well,
go ahead.
It's better than staying in the middle of the road. The tornado is obviously going
down. No, and that's fine. They're all running to the magical overpass. And Jonathan Kent decides to run back to get the dog. Okay, fine. Go get the dog, gets trapped in the car, hurts his ankle, he's limping. He stands off in the distance, and he can't run away from the tornado, and Clark just stands there because Jonathan puts his hand up like, no, don't do it.
Right, because he would reveal himself.
However.
To dozens of people.
Then
he fades in the tornado and becomes blue glowy, apparently.
Right. However, my problems with that scene are, number one, reverse it. A child is going to do anything they can to save their parent.
Yep.
They're not going to care that people are going to see them, unless it's been beaten into your head since you were a small child, don't reveal your powers. Mm-hmm. So that really enforces that. I understand the lesson there is by not revealing himself, he let his father die.
Yes.
I get that was the point of the lesson.
Right.
But to me it wasn't realistic. He would have said, screw it. And besides, they've established,
and that would have established him as this brash version of himself. That doesn't fit his character.
But another thing is, he's super fast. Couldn't he have done it without being seen?
They never show you don't any think of the super fast stuff. On
no, they there, well, they do in a couple of scenes.
There is
mostly, but mostly with him airborne. You don't see him run quickly very.
There's
often.
A couple of scenes but if they're quick bursts on the ground.
Yeah.
Not him running for a long amount.
But there was
of time.
Was it the whoosh that you got in Smallville?
Right.
The blur.
Yeah, the blur.
Even though he's supposed to be faster than a speeding bullet.
Yeah.
And more powerful than a locomotive, which that was the nod to that was when the locomotive was thrown at him. Yeah. So, yes.
Good one.
So I understand that's brash, but it's like, that's why I felt like they should have stuck with a heart attack. It's to keep the lesson of, no matter how powerful you are, people are still going to die, and you can try your best, your hardest, save who you can, but you can't save everyone. And that was the lesson there. But now this was the lesson of, by hiding, I have let my father die.
Yeah, and I'm sure he was conflicted over that. But at the same time, I was okay with the way it stood.
Of course you were okay. You loved this movie. You want to sleep with this movie. You want to have children with this movie. We understand. It wasn't that good.
Shouldn't he marry the movie first before he has children? Because that's kind of, never mind.
Well, in today's world, you know, we don't worry about moral compasses.
Nuclear family is a thing of the past.
So now with the whole acceptance thing, hiding, don't reveal yourself, acceptance, there wasn't, I felt, they could have really shown it more with more exposition. The only exposition that showed it was the acceptance by the military.
Uh-huh.
Yet everyone in the world knows what's going on. I'm sorry. Like, they showed the CNN, UFOs coming, blah, blah, blah. So everyone knows this is going on. Why didn't they have more news footage? You know, this is happening. Here's this alien who's fighting for us now.
Uh-huh.
And then shown crowds cheering him on at the end. Or something along those lines. Because, you know, the whole am I accepted, am I not accepted thing would have been more powerful if they showed him accepted at the end of the movie, or at least on some level more so than they did.
Perhaps, but maybe they avoided that on purpose. Because I think there could still potentially be some character building and drama that they do in the sequel of maybe he's still looked at as a threat by some people. Maybe there's still, you know, some, you know, opposition to and some suspicion of him that doesn't really get fully resolved.
Where he can grow into be where he can grow to be the superhero that the world needs, not what it wants.
Well, not that specifically.
No, because again, now we're going to have...
And that's something that potentially, if they introduce Lex Luthor in the next one, he could exploit that.
Exactly. And that's canon from the comic books. Lex Luthor has spent the last 20 years saying, this is an alien invader, we have to get rid of him.
Right.
He doesn't belong. They brought that into Smallville. Yes, that's fine. And that you can leave that element, but I'm sorry, you have a theme of acceptance. Do a better job of showing him being accepted by the end of the movie. That, yes, he didn't have to hide forever because he is a super good guy.
Yeah.
You know, he can be accepted at the end. But by not showing that, you missed the boat. You know, it was like, it made me feel empty. That would have uplifted me at the end of the movie and made me feel better about it if they had shown that it's in some capacity. But because they didn't, I just left the theater on a downer. You know?
You mean you didn't see that after credit scene where he was being cheered on by crowds of people?
There was no after credit scene.
Not in your movie theater anyway.
So yes. So
how many more dramatic points do you have to argue with?
I am not, you know, again.
You've not yet begun to fight?
What?
I'm just
John's pointing at his watch.
His non-existent watch, for that matter.
But I feel that, you know, we shouldn't be adhered to a format. Anyway.
No, we take the time we need.
No, but, okay, so overall, what I'm getting at is the movie suffers a lot from editing and pacing and how they put it together. I felt it could have been a much better movie, you know, again. And they started out bigger than I think they should have, because now it's where do you go from here? Those two main points is really what hurt it for me. Okay. You know, I kind of felt like maybe they were competing too much with Marvel, but Marvel's already at a point where, yes, they built up to the Avengers movie, they built up to the large scale. You have to scale back Superman, which now brings me to some of the points.
I think they did scale him back a little bit.
Which brings me back to now some of the things I liked about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Liked,
you have a section for that?
Unfortunately, it's the smallest section. Yeah. I liked that they scaled back his powers.
Yeah.
I liked that he wasn't a super, super duper duper ooper being.
Right.
Like, he struggled when that oil rig was falling apart. And they showed him struggling.
Right.
You know, it was almost...
able to find his strength to hold
right,
it up.
Right. It was almost Spider-Man-like strength, mm-hmm, as opposed to Superman-level strength. I liked... But again, this also goes a little bit back to the pacing issues. When he first gets hit with the machine guns from the helicopter,
mm-hmm,
and this happens to all three, the two Kryptonians and Superman, they get knocked blown back by
right,
the force of the bullet. Why? Because they're not used to that force.
Right.
You know? But then they didn't, like, show it again, which, again, I felt like was an inconsistency.
Well, because they learned to brace themselves for it.
Right, and I get that, but I kind of felt, you know, they should have shown it a couple more times.
Perhaps.
You know, it would have been more powerful, like, you know, then show them
they
at the end
on the cutting room
walking towards like bullets being shot at them. Like, yeah, they could have done something more powerful that way.
Right.
But yes, scaling back his powers, making him a little more believable in that sense.
Right, and a bit more accessible.
Yeah, accessible, thank you. Amy Adams was amazing in this movie.
She was awesome. She was a great Lois Lane.
Yeah,
anybody who can walk around with a corduroyized internal injury like that, it's just, he's got my
book. Okay, and again, there's another...
She risked her neck in a lot of ways in that. I mean, for one, just going into that ice cave on that cliff was incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
But she was willing to do it for the sake of the story.
Yeah.
She saw there was something there. She's a story bloodhound. She's curious. And she exercises that curiosity.
One of the things that bugged me in, one of the reviews about the movie, they were praising Margot Kidder's Lois Lane versus Amy Adams. They raised Margot Kidder above.
Mm.
But I kind of, after this movie, I definitely take Amy Adams over Margot Kidder because, I'm sorry, she was the curious woman. She was in Superman, like trying to show her take charge of issues, but yet she was also the damsel in distress at the same time.
Right, but it was distress that was believable because she was out of her depth.
No, I'm talking about Margot Kidder.
Well, yeah, Margot Kidder was often the damsel in distress.
It's like, well, don't show her as a strong woman in one scene and then as the damsel in distress in the next scene. Like, in this one, when she was the damsel in distress, she was in a situation that was way out of her control. That she put herself into, and she wasn't screaming, "Save me, Superman," over and over again.
Right. Like, for instance, she was in the escape pod because she was attempting to escape.
Right.
And, you know, and so she put herself in that situation. She was taking risks to put herself in that situation where, you know, a lesser person might have crumbled, you know, under that pressure sooner. Whereas she took charge, she took action, you know, in a situation where she knew she was out of her depth and didn't have, you know, nearly the powers or the ability to stand up to these other people. So let me continue.
All right, odd edit. So what were we saying? The betrayal of Lois, right? Like, she was in a situation in the plane where that she couldn't, you know, she put herself in there to help save humanity, and then the plane blew up.
Although I do have a contention with that scene, oddly. There was no reason for her to be on that plane.
No, there wasn't.
There was
I agree with that.
Obviously, the military were there because that's their job. The scientists had reason to be there because he knew stuff. But
if we want to bring realism into these movies, folks, the military would never allow a news person to get on the plane when they're trying to save the world.
Right.
Just would not happen.
Dangerous place.
And they killed Neil Hamilton, who normally doesn't die in the continuity, as far as I remember. But... go on.
Right. Well, and that's actually, but there was another thing in that scene that kind of bothered me a little bit was and I understand it was how the scene was written to have enough time to have it make sense, but they were struggling putting the key into the ship and...
because of the orientation.
Right. But Jor-El, earlier in the movie, spoilers, explains to Lois Lane...
that ship has sailed.
Yeah.
Why do you keep bothering saying that?
I don't know. I'm just having fun. Explains to Lois Lane how to save the world, how to open up the Phantom Zone to suck all these Kryptonians back in.
Sure.
By crashing the two engines into each other.
Why wasn't that part of the instruction manual?
Right. Why was that little tidbit? You have to turn the nose cone on the ship.
How was Jor-El to know that the nose cone might be out of alignment?
Okay, but, you know, like...
he didn't see it.
I don't know. It just seemed so...
he didn't see that anything because he's dead at that point.
True, but his holographic depiction didn't have that knowledge to work from.
Right. It just seemed... I don't know. It just seemed like... it seemed silly. Like, they could have... you know, Jor-El could have explained that.
But did you know...
but it gave Emil a chance to be smart.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Don't you know when you put a key in, you're supposed to turn it, right?
Yeah, you're supposed to make sure the tumbler's all on so you can unlock it.
Exactly. That's usually when keys don't align. That's what's wrong.
So,
made perfect sense.
Okay,
and
so
that was the extent of Emil Hamilton's brilliance, was turning the key.
All right. Now, Cavill.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I think...
I liked him.
I liked him. He looks the part.
Yeah.
Some people don't like his portrayal because they feel that, again, it was too earnest. There wasn't any fun in his character.
Well, I think that was a symptom of a larger problem in that there wasn't much fun in the movie. Like,
right.
Like I said earlier, there wasn't any comedy in it. There wasn't any, it was all serious pretty much all the time.
Right.
Which kind of fun was missing? Was it the, yay, I let my father die fun? Or was it the, oh my god, I think they're going to take me apart to see what makes me tick fun? I mean, he really didn't
there,
have
there
much
were definitely,
to be fun
okay,
about.
Right, there were definitely a lot of levels of fun, but the humorous fun was missing, and the lighter side of things was missing.
Right, we go back again, not to be a slave to the Donnerverse, or they even depicted this a little bit in Smallville.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the things I liked about Smallville, because it was a 10-year series, they took time to develop his powers, okay?
Yeah.
In the Donner movies...
So they never developed his humor the way he had in the original movies.
Right. In the movies, though, they show, okay, they do show that it's a slower development, though, too. Like, at that point, when he's still at home on the farm, he can run super fast, he's strong, invulnerable, but, like, you kind of get the feeling that's all he has at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And they show him racing against the train. That's a fun scene. Right?
Yeah.
Because if you're a teenage kid and you can run super fast and you live in a farm area, like,
right.
You're gonna have fun with your powers.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they took that and twisted it on its ear where they made it scary that he has these powers.
Right.
You know, again, beautiful scene, Martha Kent saying, here's how you control your powers. But now that they made them scary to a little kid, they don't show the kid having fun with these powers.
Right.
And, you know, and they show him as a kid saving people on a bus. They show him depicting, you know, using them, but not having fun with them.
Yeah.
And to me, oh, and getting beat up, you know, because he's not going to fight back again, back to the hiding who he truly is,
right.
Theme of the movie. But, like, you know, where was the fun? You know,
well,
but again,
Jesus
that's not
fun with his powers either when he was a child.
Oh, yeah, a lot of religious themes in this one. Which, again, isn't the fault of Cavill, but I kind of feel like just, like, what they could have done is when he was going to the Indian Ocean, right,
mm-hmm.
to stop the giant spider, Kevin, you made it into the movie. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, go look up Kevin Smith's Superman movie. I think you can find the script online. You can find plenty of YouTube clips where he's being interviewed talking about it. But in his script, there is a giant spider for Superman to fight, a giant mechanical spider. And I'm sorry, but I kind of felt like that world engine looked a little bit like a giant mechanical spider, and it might have been an homage to Kevin Smith.
Well, initially it looked kind of like the tripods from War of the Worlds.
Well, that's true, too. So. But when he was going to fight... fly off to the Indian Ocean,
mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like, and I understand it's the origin story.
He should have fallen by someone and made their ice cream fly in their face.
And he's still not 100% sure of himself, but he should have turned to the colonel, who was like unsure about what was going on, and been like, it'll be fine. You know, and gave him a little smile.
Yeah.
Like a reassurance, because that's what a superhero does. A
yeah,
superhero.
But I don't think he was sure that it would have been fine. So
we're
I think
kind of
that's...
nitpicky on that.
I think...
But
I
that to me,
that
brings the lightheartedness.
I think the way it was written. And all, I think that we may see more of that in the future.
I hope we do. I think
because, again, this is the development. This is the introduction. This is Superman getting to some level of footing. And now that he's got that footing, I think we'll see him grow and become more similar to the Superman we want him to be in future movies.
Right, but like I said, I think he did a decent job. I think that was the direction in the script that hurt how I feel the character was portrayed.
Yeah.
And the other thing is there was a polar bear in Kevin Smith's script, and there's a polar bear when they're outside of the Fortress Solitude.
Of course,
when they find it. So it's like, again, I think that was another wink to Kevin Smith's script.
It could have been worse. It could have been Tim Burton's.
Well, no, Kevin Smith wrote it. Tim Burton was going to direct it.
Oh, he was.
Yeah,
oh,
that was all the same movie. Yes. And our
yeah,
our
yeah.
good friend Nicolas Cage.
Up, don't look at Nick. If you see the Nicolas Cage in the Superman, just you've gone too far.
That just should not have happened.
No. He's knocking at the door.
So, speaking about his powers, though, I think that I like the depiction of his powers. I agree with you. I like that they were a little softer, a little more accessible versions of the powers. One of the things my wife brought up about it, because I commented after I'd seen it that I saw it and I liked it. Someone commented that they thought there was a little too much punching in the face. And after comments about revoking his man card, I had conversations along those lines with my family about it. And, you know, my son thought there not enough punching in the face. My daughter thought it was fine. My wife said that she felt that it wasn't too violent necessarily, but there was not enough use of other powers in the battle sequences that there were.
Yes. And it felt like superpowered beings having a street brawl.
Right. But and the one thing she mentioned is, like, why didn't he ever use his super breath?
Right.
But I think, and my thought about that is, I don't think they intended to have that be part of his set of powers. Because that's one that's a little less accessible. That's a little bit less believable as a power.
Especially when you have problems breathing.
No, because this is canon in the comic books, that he has a super lung capacity.
Where does he keep this super lung capacity?
Well,
it's
the fact that... Well, maybe not so much
is
the super
breath.
Is he
like the TARDIS in that there's more room on the inside?
People argue that, oh, well, how can he fly in space when it's the sun that gives him his powers and that he has... it's the atmosphere, too, right? Like, he's still... They're not saying that... Because they say he still needs to breathe. So the idea is, well, he can take a really deep breath and hold it for a really long time because of his capacity.
Right.
So thus, that's where the idea of super breath was born. Because they had to explain how he could fly through space.
Right. But he didn't fly through space in this movie at all.
Not in this movie, no. But perhaps he will have to fly through space at some other point, and they will have to introduce it at that point.
Maybe, maybe not.
You know. Again, though, I do think, right, why didn't they introduce the super speed? I think they didn't introduce the super speed because they want to have Flash in the Justice League movie.
So they don't want it to look like it's just, here's a version of Superman with no other powers but speed.
Right,
you know,
and
That's just a cop-out. Because, I mean, first off, even Superman can't be in two places at once. And second off, I think the canon is that Superman is not as fast as Flash.
Yeah, it is. But at the same time, I think the other reason that, like, to be truly super fast also requires you to think super fast, for you to react super quickly.
Right.
And I think that and that's how they depicted it in Smallville, that essentially he could perceive things at a different speed than everyone else
right.
and was able to react to them faster.
Yes.
And while I enjoyed the way that that came across visually from time to time, I didn't think it made sense. Because if he could really think that fast, why wasn't he always thinking that fast? You know, he. There are plenty of times when he should have been thinking faster.
No.
And
does his brain get Alzheimer's really quick? Or?
Perhaps. So I think that in Man of Steel, that where he did use bursts of speed, it's because he could use it without having to worry about what was in the way
right.
on those straight
yes.
trajectories. Whereas anything more complicated requires a lot more agility and concentration.
Right, and you can also, again, use the argument, this is the first movie, he's not fully developed yet.
Sure.
And they can bring things along the way.
Right, maybe he'll grow to adapt to it and be able to think faster and react
yeah,
faster.
I have a sneaking suspicion, though, they don't want to show him as a super fast being because they want to have a Flash as a super fast being. And not people go, well, what do you need Flash for when you got Superman?
Right.
Because he can't be in two places at once. That's
and because Flash can think super fast.
And Flash has a sense of humor.
Like
he's supposed to.
Also, two other things that I kind of liked, and one I might just be a crazy person on, but other people have commented about this online, was the first one is the homage to the original comic book. And that is in the shape of the ship that takes Clark to Earth, or Jor-El, Clark Kal-El to Earth. It's if you read the original Action Comics number one,
okay,
and you look at how the ship is drawn, they made it look like that. It wasn't it wasn't a giant ornament, which they did then homage that later on in the movie.
Right.
When Jor-El is explaining the history of everything.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting with the way that all that stuff was very, like, this cartoonish depiction of things using the metal marbles, so to speak.
Right.
To step through things, I thought was pretty clever.
And then the second homage that I enjoyed, and again, maybe I was crazy, when he is punching the beam, punching the beam for, he has his fist up, and people have called him, said he's punching the beam. He's flying into the world engine to punch through it and destroy it.
Right.
The gravity beam is affecting him, and it's morphing his face, and for like maybe a second or two, it morphs into the image of Christopher Reeve.
Does it? I missed that. I must not have seen
so, that. Now, right, you say you missed it. John said he missed it, but there are, I found quite a few posts online. A lot of people have said this. And at first, I thought, maybe I'm just crazy because it was the angle at which he was looking up.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at Cavill and you look at Reeve, Cavill has a wide nose and Reeve has a thin nose. And he had a, even though he'd be looking at a different angle, no, he really looked like Christopher Reeve in the shot.
Yeah.
And there were rumors before the movie came out that they were going to have a CGI homage to Christopher Reeve, and I think that's what it was, because that's the scene where you have him in action and a really close-up of his face.
Right.
And it seems that makes the most sense at that point.
Right.
So I really hope I'm right, and I'm not just crazy, because I really... That was one part that I really liked.
Well, there were several Easter eggs in the movie besides this.
Well, yeah.
And, which I found it interesting to try to find and point out. The obvious one was the LexCorp trucks.
Yeah.
There was also the battle on the satellite that if you were eagle-eyed, you could catch. There was a Wayne Enterprises logo on the side. But there was also an homage to Smallville by having one of his classmates who ended up becoming his friend after bullying him was Pete Ross. And Pete Ross was one of his friends in Smallville.
But he's also a character from the comic books.
Right, but I'm just saying that the fact that they paid homage to those roots.
The real homage to Smallville, I thought, was the Sullivan station, or Sullivan auto repair place.
Okay.
Because that's an homage to Chloe Sullivan.
Right.
Who is strictly a Smallville character, was created for Smallville.
And you cut the LexCorp logo on some.
Yes. Welcome to 10 seconds ago.
Yeah. I'm just making sure.
Go look for more screams online.
oh, come on.
And
actually, I was looking at the fact that someone had screamed.
There was also homage to the third member of Zod's crew in the original Superman movie.
With the big hulking Kryptonian.
Right. You do see other Kryptonians in this crew of people that come to Earth, but there's one of the foot soldiers that's marching around a lot who's a good head taller than most of the rest,
mm-hmm.
and always has his mask on, which the mask has sort of a beardish look to it.
Right.
So that's clearly, you know.
Right. You never actually see that character's face, I don't think.
No, you don't. The mask never comes off. And he never talks.
Right. There was also, people are going to get upset with me. There was a reference to Booster Gold in the movie.
Was there?
The company, there was like a comic book company on a billboard, I can't remember the name, which is a reference to Booster Gold. I'm not a Booster Gold fan, but I did read this online. And then there was a reference to Star Sapphire. The girl who says, oh, he's hot.
Soldier?
The soldier that says he's hot.
At the end
has the same last name, I believe, as Star Sapphire's
Ferris.
Yeah, I believe that's what it was.
Like Carol Ferris is the
Carol one Ferris, yeah, and that her name tag says Ferris, but
does it?
Yeah. So it's like okay, yeah. So they were planted a lot of DC Easter eggs in this movie to say that there's a bigger universe than just Superman here.
Right.
So yes, and that was okay. Yes, that was good. This is kind of saying yes, there's going to be a
expanded universe
of Justice League movie, hopefully.
Yeah. If they don't screw it up.
But yes, but like why again? Just take a little time for more exposition, a little less action, and it would have been. Now, maybe it's direct reference to Superman Returns, and everyone saying he never throws a punch in that movie, but he doesn't.
Right.
Yeah, but he didn't have anyone too far.
Yeah, but also justifiably, he didn't have anyone to punch per se in that movie. Other than the Giants Island.
Lois got on my nerves there for a while. He could have punched her.
Yeah.
But, I know. Sorry.
Not cool, man. Not cool.
That was a depiction of Lois I didn't care for at all.
Yeah, I didn't think she played that part well.
Yeah. Holmes, right? No, not Holmes.
No, that was, I always forget her name.
Come on, John. You're control of the laptop today.
Let's see who gets there first.
you guys are looking that up.
Kate Bosworth.
There you go.
Bosworth,
I knew it was a Kate something.
They could have done a lot better exposition. And then, so, another issue, I don't know. We can keep going on this. I could go on this for days.
I'm sure you can.
Honestly.
Maybe we should summarize soon.
Yeah. You know, because I was going to go into... the lights went out. Everyone's waving their hands for the automatic lights.
Like, they still care.
So, okay, my last point.
Okay.
Before we sum up here. Superman is now encoded with the DNA for all future Kryptonians. Like,
from that weird Neanderthal skull that...
from a Neanderthal skull. That is not canon.
No.
That was something specifically added for this movie.
It was a plot device for Zod to care about...
going after him?
Going after him and care about him as a being, to being the only key to preserving his race.
Right. But...
Here's the thing. I would have been more okay with it if they had... I didn't have a problem with it, per se, but it seemed just, like I said, a plot device. I would have found it more interesting if that was also somehow an explanation of some of the embodiment of the abilities that he has.
Yes.
That gave him abilities and advantages that the other Kryptonians didn't have.
Right, and that's actually...
And he didn't.
It would have made it more unique.
That's kind of what I was hoping for when they... threw that in there.
Right.
Like, okay, well then maybe they'll explain, maybe he'll have powers they don't have.
Right.
And...
Which didn't turn out.
Yeah, so...
They're just colorful cats on his jeans, basically.
Cats on his jeans.
On his jeans.
So, right. So, like, why? You know, is it going to be a plot device...
In the future?
In the future? Or is it just going to be
cancer from all these weird cells that are embedded in this?
Yeah. No one's mentioned that yet. Yes, Kryptonian cancer. That's got to be a pain to get rid of.
Those nested cells are what react with other elements of kryptonite that are resident, and that's why he becomes. So, in pain and weakened.
Well, then there you go. You could have explained it that way. You could have said, when he was on the ship, which, I'm sorry, a lot of people haven't pointed this out, the ship was from Krypton, and there's a good chance there's kryptonite in that ship.
Yeah.
That there's, because it was material from that planet.
Right.
You know? So there could have been kryptonite used in that ship and could have explained why he was weakened, but no one went there.
Yeah.
You know, because they didn't want kryptonite in the first movie. All right, fine. But, yes, then if you want to take it further and say it explains why kryptonite affects him.
Right.
Because he has the genetic code of all the people.
Right. Basically trying to tear itself out of his cells and...
Right.
Painful
then
process.
Fine. I will accept that. So those Zack Snyder and Christopher Nolan.
We'll leave this idea for you guys to consider.
Yes, listen to this podcast and take our advice going forward. So, to sum up, we're not going to settle this.
No, we're not going to settle it. We just give our rating on what we thought of the movie.
Yeah. Okay. So, what are you doing? 10 capes.
Right, out of 10 capes.
Your rating out of 10 capes, John.
I will give it 8 capes and 1... Oop. There. Can I get it again? Oh, no. There we go. There we go. Yeah. So, yeah. No, I liked it. It's got places to go. I think it was too short. I think if they left enough stuff in the cutting room floor and they come out with a Blu-ray and they put in another hour, of exposition, like of interaction between the characters, I really think it was a pretty good start, for the new whatever they decide, however long this goes.
Benjamin?
I'm also going to give it 8, just because I think that while I really did enjoy it, there were other superhero movies that I've enjoyed more because they integrated humor into them, such as Iron Man 3 and things like that. So it's not a 10, it's not a 9. I would say it's an 8. I really thought it was good, and I'm looking forward to what they come up with next.
All right. And I am going to give it a 5.
And higher than I expected.
Well, and again, because it could have been a better movie if it was edited a little different and maybe shown, again, more exposition, less action. I think it could have probably pulled out a 7 for me, but I'll leave it at a 5. That being said, anyone who's listened to this podcast, and if you've gotten this far and haven't seen the movie, I don't know what's wrong with you.
You are weird.
Don't let our opinions...
Don't see a movie.
Don't let our opinions cloud your opinion of the movie. You go watch the movie, and you decide for yourself what you think of it.
Who is diehard a fan of comic books that they're listening to this podcast but hasn't gone opening weekend to see Man of Steel?
That would have been me.
All right.
That would be me or somebody like me.
There you go. I guess we have our answer.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, John. That's why you're here. You're the comic relief.
Yeah, not that you. That's why you're paying me, right? I'm getting paid for this, right?
The check's in the mail.
Again?
So, boys and girls, on that note, if you haven't seen Man of Steel, go see it. And decide for yourself. And for now, I will say, don't let your kryptonite be left in your pocket. Have a good night.
Right.
Hey everyone, you just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak. Please you can reach at ben@superheroespeak.com. And did you know you could also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John, and you can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com, and if you want, there's our Twitter account, @superheroespeak.
Thanks, and check us out at those spots.